Welcome to City Club of Eugene. It is June 22nd, and this is our June 22nd, 2018 program. Cryptocurrency, can you bank on Bitcoin? This is the 36th program in our 2018-2019 programming year. I am Eric Richardson, the president-elect of City Club and your host for today. Today we have a speaker who is a crypto security specialist who will take on a descriptive, informative presentation about cryptocurrency. Locally, St. Vincent's received a pledge of $2 million to pay for construction of a youth home, $2 million for boys in Eugene. Today we'll learn all about the need around cryptocurrencies. I hope you enjoy today's program. And I'd like to also encourage all folks who are listening tonight to become a member of City Club of Eugene. You can do so by visiting cityclubofeugene.org. Support for City Club is also provided by our members and sponsors, including our diamond sponsors, Kaiser Permanente. Kaiser Permanente exists to provide high-quality, affordable healthcare services and to improve the health of their members and the communities they serve. For more information, please visit www.kp.org. We also would like to thank our gold sponsors. Mosasavi Plastic Surgery and Seba Medical Spa. Evans, Elder, Brown, and Schubert. Guidos, Churnside, and Balthrop PC, and the AARP of Oregon. And a special thanks to a few of our in-kind sponsors. That would be KLCC, 89.7 FM, Dot Dotson's Photography, Pack Info, and Simplified Computing, LLC. Now I'd like to thank Sandra Bishop for coordinating today's program, and I'll turn it over to Sandra to introduce today's speaker. Sandra.
Thank you very much. Today we have a wonderful speaker, and I have the pleasure of introducing him, Maren Peasley. Maren serves as an identity specialist at a local global security vendor, Symantec, where he helps customers understand complex business software dealing with authentication and encryption, and he helps the internal teams design and evaluate cryptography usage in products and services. When I asked a friend of mine, I told her we were interested in doing something on cryptocurrencies, and I said, but I don't really know anybody that's an expert. She said, I've got the perfect person for you, and it was Maren, so we're happy to have Maren with us today. He recently co-founded DC541, a local cybersecurity discussion forum that meets monthly and is open to the public. If you're interested in checking out Maren's cybersecurity discussion forum online, it can be found at D as in dog, C as in cat, and then the digits 541.com. DC541.org. Thank you. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Maren. Thanks.
So thank you to the City Club of Eugene, and thank you all for listening today. I first encountered Bitcoin at the end of 2013 in technical discussions with my colleagues. We were always scouring the news to be aware of whatever the next change would be, and Bitcoin was starting to grab headlines. What was this program that would pay you if you run it on your computer? Millions of what exactly got stolen from a Bitcoin exchange? I'll speak up, thank you. What was a Bitcoin, and why would I exchange it? So as Bitcoin was something anyone could try, and it involved encryption and cryptography, and encryption and cryptography were big conversations we were having around then, we decided to play with it. So about the beginning of 2014, we downloaded Bitcoin mining programs we found out there and tried to get them to mine Bitcoin for us. Pretty quickly, the economics became apparent. We can't get rich instantly off of this. On the technical side, the ordinary computers that we were using weren't fast enough to make money on this. The computer's graphics card is the next fastest thing, and that wasn't fast enough to make money off of this. Other equipment out there called field programmable gate arrays were faster still, but they couldn't still keep up. Only purpose-built custom hardware from a limited group of manufacturers was fast enough to make money, and just barely. At the time, I calculated that each month it would make half again as much as it did the previous month, leading to a payoff, a break-even point of about a year. So the two big costs going into it for us, and while we were playing with it, were the cost to pay for equipment. Here's an example that I'm holding up. And the electrical costs of just keeping it running. Since this was constantly changing, the manufacturers are always putting out the next version. Make sure that you buy it as soon as it comes out, or else you were behind and it wasn't worth doing anymore. But I'd like to take a step back, since we only have a short time together, and outline what I think we can cover. I'll begin with a light introduction to Bitcoin. Bitcoin has some extremely technical parts that I'll touch on only lightly, usually just by name or function so we can understand where it is, what it is, and how we relate to it, just not the how it works part. Specifically, I'd like to talk about what it is and what it isn't, as well as who uses Bitcoin and who can use it. And if there's time left, I'll talk about some practical matters associated with Bitcoin, and that will probably run us out of time. So what it is. As a brief disclaimer, I'm not a Bitcoin fanatic. I am a cryptography aficionado. I like complicated constructs, and with Bitcoin and other cryptocurrency, there are certainly lots of those. So Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the world's first successful cryptocurrency. It was launched in 2009. A Bitcoin is like digital money. So just like US dollars or Japanese yen, for instance, it is used as a currency to buy and sell goods and services. But that's probably where the similarities end. It was invented by an enigmatic personality, Satoshi Nakamoto, almost surely a pseudonym used by a person or several people. There are several really good guesses about who this is. There's at least one really bad one, which makes for some entertaining reading, but nothing that's universally accepted. Bitcoin is not the world's first attempt at creating digital cash or a cryptocurrency, but with a market capitalization around $100 billion, it's certainly the first successful one. Bitcoin is not the only current cryptocurrency out there. There are more than 1,000 of them I found online. Bitcoin's value among all of the cryptocurrency out there accounts for about a third of it. So Bitcoin was deliberately launched by Satoshi to overcome some features and issues associated with the world's current currencies. So there are two interlocked issues that I found associated with Bitcoin that it tries to take aim at. One is third parties interfering with transactions and undoing them if they choose. These are financial transactions. And the other is third parties gaining knowledge of transactions. Now, these third parties are the financial institutions that we recognize and rely upon. So in the origin paper by Satoshi, both were cited as driving up costs, making small, casual transactions impossible. So Bitcoin aspires to create peer-to-peer, non-reversible, small, casual transactions possible across the internet, which is a bit of a tall order, but something that I think it's been successful at so far. Some clarifications before I go any further. Bitcoin, when I refer to it that way, refers to the network, the thing that makes all of it work. A Bitcoin is quantity one of that currency, currently worth somewhere around $7,000 each. Last note is I'm going to use the word protocol a few times. It just means the rules that a computer follows so that when it communicates with other computers, it's going to be recognized. If it deviates from that, or goes off protocol, its communications will be automatically rejected. And that's about as deep into that as I'm going to go. Now, with a little of the background about what Bitcoin is, I'd like to talk about some of the things associated with Bitcoin that aren't actually part of Bitcoin. The first is that Bitcoin is not anonymous money. Bitcoin has what's called a public ledger that records all transactions to it. So anyone can go back and look at any or all transactions all the way back to the very beginning. A particular Bitcoin can be tracked through all of its transactions, its whole lifetime. Tracking who is using a particular Bitcoin or who has how many Bitcoins is a tougher problem, but not always impossible. Anonymous money is not one of Bitcoin's goals. There are other efforts out there, like the Monero cryptocurrency, that attempt to design this into its protocol. It's just not in Bitcoin. Also, Bitcoin is not ransomware, with ransomware being a computer program that runs on someone's computer and encrypts all of the files, or maybe encrypts all the files on a network and demands payment before it will decrypt them. Ransomware uses Bitcoin, probably because it's popular and also because of the irrevocable nature of Bitcoin transactions. And lastly, and maybe most controversially, I think Bitcoin is not actually a currency. If a currency has three properties, if it has a medium of exchange, it can be used as a store of value, and generally they are centrally controlled, Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies aren't very good at this. So let's look at this briefly. A currency has to be a medium of exchange. Okay, this is a pass. Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies have to be good at this, so they have that one down. Currencies have to be a good store of value, and that's where I'd say Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies fall down pretty quickly because their value is changing all the time. Last December, it was extremely high, and then it cratered, and I think it cratered even earlier this week. So its value goes up and down too much for it to be used effectively by most, but not all. I'm actually going to touch on that later. And also, existing currencies are generally issued by a government central bank, so they have sovereign control over their own currency. They can make decisions at different times about that currency. So they can change monetary policy. They can do things like restrict or loosen various controls, like if they're going to print more money and how much of that. In contrast, Bitcoin is deliberately decentralized, and that's sort of a new concept in currency, at least. The monetary policy for Bitcoin was baked in up front. So there's a maximum theoretical amount of Bitcoin that there ever will be, and it's mined or produced at a known rate. So that's a lot of abstract. I want to go through a quick example of how this might actually be used around here. So let's say we're at the Eugene Saturday Market, and we've got a vendor of handmade goods, Alice, and we also have a customer, Bob, who likes the look of a pen, for instance. So Bob will take that to Alice, and Bob wants to pay for this in Bitcoin. Alice will open up her tablet computer, for instance, go to her Bitcoin wallet app and type in the current price for the pen. Maybe that's $4. The app will convert that into the current amount of Bitcoin automatically, and Alice will turn that around for Bob. Bob will take out his smartphone, open up his Bitcoin wallet app, and then scan that QR code, confirm that the amount on there is correct, and then send the Bitcoin. After a short delay, the transaction is confirmed. Bob has a new pen, and Alice has about $4 worth of Bitcoin. So we have a vendor, Alice. We've got customer, Bob. But there are some other roles that make this work behind the scenes. Alice is not a currency speculator and wants actual dollars, hopefully as soon as possible. So she'll go to a Bitcoin exchange of her selection and get that converted back from Bitcoin into dollars, and then later have that deposited in her bank account. So we have a vendor now, we have a customer, we have the exchange. The last role I'd like to bring up is a Bitcoin miner. So a Bitcoin miner is what makes the whole network work. A Bitcoin miner needs to collect together these transactions, like between Alice and Bob, and collect a lot of those together, and then try to make a new block. That block is in something called the blockchain, and the reward for doing that is to receive the next group of Bitcoin that are produced. So that's currently 12.5 Bitcoin, or about $80,000 plus $1,000 of transaction fees, essentially a lottery that's happening every 10 minutes. So that's the reward. The cost is significant. A Bitcoin miner has to run that equipment. So the example that I held up earlier, and they also have to keep it powered on continuously. It actually ends up being that the electricity cost overshadows the equipment cost. So the likelihood of any given Bitcoin miner or operation succeeding in getting one of those blocks, because there's such fierce competition for this, is essentially zero. So individual Bitcoin miners will team up together in pools, and a Bitcoin pool has a much greater chance of getting one of those Bitcoins, extending the block and blockchain and all of that. So the pools, when they win, will then distribute the work in some fashion that's known. So that's a bit of the upfront of how Bitcoin works and a lot of the behind the scenes of how it works too. But about the blockchain, I think the biggest contribution Satoshi made wasn't the creation of Bitcoin, it was actually the creation of the blockchain. As an analogy, Satoshi didn't create a car, Satoshi created cars and paved roads. So just like paved roads can be used by the original cars, new cars, bicycles, airplanes, pedestrians, hopefully not all at the same time, the blockchain can be used by Bitcoin, other cryptocurrencies, identity platforms, financial settlement systems, computing platforms, and more. Also, I've been talking all about Bitcoin, but it's not, again, the only cryptocurrency out there. Other cryptocurrencies essentially modify pieces of how Bitcoin works for their own particular needs. Here's an example. Bitcoin transactions happen every 10 minutes. That's just baked in. That's how the Bitcoin protocol works. And as an individual, hopefully your transaction to purchase a pen happens within that chunk of time. If not, you have to wait for the next 10 minutes. Litecoin, by contrast, is a different cryptocurrency out there, and it goes four times faster. So it confirms transactions every 2.5 minutes. Litecoin got its own brand new start as a cryptocurrency in 2011 and has a market capitalization of about $5 billion. Last year, we saw a creation of a new variant, a new type of cryptocurrency, where there are groups of developers who are working on these cryptocurrencies. And they differ about some topic, and they can't come to agreement. And these are the developers that are fixing, modifying, and extending that core piece of a cryptocurrency, its protocol. So an extreme result of this difference is what's called a hard fork. So essentially, there's the old way things were happening, and then there's a new way that they propose. At a particular point in time, they decide to part ways. Some of the Bitcoin miners keep up with the old way, and some decide to go with the new way. So the one of them, which happened last year, is called Bitcoin Cash. And again, it got its start along with Bitcoin. They agree up until the point where they separated, and then they split ways and have two different blockchains. That was last August, and now it's worth $14 billion. So bringing this back to Earth, let's go back to the Eugene Saturday market. Let's say we have three vendors again, and they all decide to sell similar goods, and they all each offer their own cryptocurrency. They'll accept a different cryptocurrency. We have one who will take Bitcoin, one who will take Litecoin, and another who will take Ether from the Ethereum network. It's just another cryptocurrency. So the people who are standing in line for the vendor accepting Bitcoin will have to wait maybe 5 to 15 minutes for that transaction to finish. With Litecoin, the vendor accepting Litecoin, that's a lot smaller, maybe 1 to 4 minutes. And then with Ether, the last vendor accepting the Ether cryptocurrency, that's a few seconds to maybe half a minute. So that's just one difference between some of the cryptocurrencies out there, the end user experience on this. There have also been a lot of articles written recently about Bitcoin's use of electricity. So the articles will have the details, and I agree with a lot of those details, and I'm not going to try to summarize all of them right now. But I think it's a necessary but disappointing result when we exchange agency, people and organizations, for a protocol. I certainly think it's more electrically efficient for anyone to go to the financial industry as it stands. but I don't think that's the right comparison, too. The benefits and costs of the financial industry are a little different than the benefits and costs associated with cryptocurrencies. For instance, if you include the salaries of personnel on both sides, plus the electrical costs as operating costs, you'd have to include salaries of executives, policymakers, managers, tellers, and technical personnel, too. If you compare those together, the operating costs of one and the operating costs of the other, I think the operating costs of a cryptocurrency are drastically smaller. But do cryptocurrencies do the same jobs that we want them to? Probably only sometimes. One additional side note about that, the algorithm that runs Bitcoin is something called a proof-of-work algorithm. There's a new one coming online that seeks to solve this electrical challenge and has other benefits too, and that's called proof of stake. So that's new, and it's showing up just recently, I think, with the Ethereum network, and I think it's too new to fully identify what all the risks and benefits of that algorithm are. So last theoretical topic before switching to some practical concerns, is Bitcoin secure? Can Bitcoin be hacked? To answer that, I'm going to split that into two pieces. Is the Bitcoin protocol secure? And are Bitcoin exchanges secure? For the first, I'd like to think that the Bitcoin protocol is practically secure. It's supporting multiple billions of dollars of value. And there are a lot of smart people who are certainly trying to steal from that. There are a lot of smart people who are trying to defend it. And if there would have been a way, they probably would have found it by now. But for our purposes, I think we can assume that it's secure. We actually have a good example of this with slight changes to Bitcoin. So there's another cryptocurrency out there called Verge, or the Verge cryptocurrency. And due to some particular ways that it decided to create its protocol, the protocol itself was hacked to the tune of, twice, to the tune of about $2 million. And now for the other half, are Bitcoin exchanges secure? So I read about Bitcoin hacks all the time, and I'll mention a few in a moment. Essentially, we read about massive amounts of money leaving via technical means. For various reasons, I think, that are independent of each other. I think each one is distinct, but I'm seeing a pattern emerge with those hacks on the exchanges. The first observation is that Bitcoin exchanges are not banks, and they don't have the same protections that banks do. And the second is that Bitcoin transactions are permanent or irrevocable. Once it's in there, it's there permanently. So the other way I'd like to split this is when you look at what the business of an exchange is, it needs to be exchanging things. So because it's a Bitcoin exchange, it's exchanging Bitcoin on one hand for something else. Let's assume US dollars for now. So exchanging them, turning them into US dollars, and then turning them back into Bitcoin, or vice versa. The other thing that an exchange does is keep balances for a long period of time. So when you purchase Bitcoin, it goes into the exchange and stays there as Bitcoin until you sell it. It becomes US dollars, and then later you send that out to your account. So if you keep a balance at a Bitcoin exchange in Bitcoin, you're doing two things. One, you're speculating that the value of Bitcoin is going to stay the same or hopefully increase. And the other thing you're doing, and this counts even if you're keeping dollars there, is you're assuming that the security precautions in place are sufficient to protect your deposit. And oftentimes, unfortunately, we're finding out that's not the case. So just a quick reference for some of the heists that have happened with Bitcoin. The Mt. Gox exchange was hacked in 2014 for $500 million. CoinCheck was hacked earlier this year for $500 million. Nice Hash exchange was hacked last year for $70 million. CoinRail earlier this year, $40 million. And then even just earlier this week, the BitThumb exchange hacked for $32 million. So that's the end of the theoretical stuff. I'd like to switch to talking about just a few practical concerns. Everything from who can use it to how to get started to Bitcoin versus normal money. So why would I use Bitcoin instead of a more familiar money? As a consumer, I think there are no good motivating reasons to do so. it might be fun to use. It might be, instead of cashing it out, if I'm really, really disturbed by the network of financial intermediaries having access to my spending patterns, then I might bother myself to exchange some money and spend a small amount of it on in some way to hide that. But again, as in terms of an individual, I don't think there's much. As a vendor, you have a couple more reasons. One is you'd weigh the advertising benefits on one side, such as being listed in a unique directory, we accept Bitcoin, versus the costs of accepting Bitcoin, perhaps tax implications, returns policy, and I'm sure others. Also, my examples with Bitcoin have been with US dollars. There are other places around the world that might be more ripe to accept cryptocurrencies. For instance, where the native currency is failing to do its job, especially as a store of value. So Zimbabwe and Venezuela are both racked by hyperinflation right now, and there are some who are speculating that Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies might step in place of the local currency, which I think is interesting. Certainly, there are a lot of dimensions to it. It's not a unidimensional aspect, but some factors playing into that are what currency can you pay your taxes in, and what currency can you use to engage in large-scale private transactions, perhaps like mortgages. Who can use Bitcoin? Basically, anybody can use Bitcoin. I think it's interesting for individuals and organizations in Lane County right now, because Lane County has a rapidly growing IT industry. Staff at these firms have an above average chance of having heard about or using Bitcoin. Also, there is have been a few news articles that affect us locally regarding Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies. So earlier this month, the Ripple network invested $1 million actual dollars in the U of O to engage in research around cryptocurrency, blockchain, and cybersecurity. So there's a good chance that local people have heard about it and could make ready use of it. So imagine I'm a citizen of Eugene, which, by the way, I am, and I have some Bitcoin. Where can I spend it? There's a website out there. There's always one more website called coinmap.org that is a map you can zoom into, and you can see who around you or which organizations around you accept Bitcoin. And I think it's free to add new venues, but I haven't tried to add one. So as a vendor, I think it's an interesting, inexpensive way to differentiate yourself from a competitor. We accept Bitcoin. And also, I think it's a unique way of going after some of this money that might be otherwise sitting around and just locked in various Bitcoin wallets that folks have around here. So I think there's money to be spent and money to be made just by going after Bitcoin. So before I conclude, one last point, mainly about taxes. I'm not a tax professional. Don't take this as tax advice. But the IRS started introducing language around virtual currencies. So I take from that they're treated like property. But it's certainly one more topic that needs to be investigated. In conclusion, can you bank on Bitcoin? To store money long-term, probably not yet. Can you use it as a novel payment method? Yes. Is it a better alternative for small fee international money transfer? Probably. So with that, I want to thank you all for listening, and I also want to personally express my gratitude to Ralph and Sandra for helping me get organized and in all the prep work they're doing behind the scenes. With that, thank you.
Now we'll take a break for about 5 minutes to formulate questions from each of our tables, and then we'll return with audience questions. Remember, only City Club members are allowed to ask questions at the microphone. Thank you.
You're listening to KLCC, informing and inspiring listeners for more than a half century. Broadcasting in HD at KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, KLFR Reedsport 89.1, and at 88.1, KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, and KLBR Bend. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College.
Welcome back to the June 22nd. 2018 City Club program, cryptocurrency, can you bank on Bitcoin? Before we get to the Q&A session, I'd like to also thank Ralph Pledger for his help coordinating today's program. Marin Peasley, go ahead and approach the mic and we'll get to the Q&A session. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Marilyn Milne, City Club member for a long time. And my question is, does this work for the marijuana industry?
That's an interesting question. Thank you for the question. I don't see why not, but I don't know all the regulatory hurdles and all the things inside of it. Bitcoin can be used as a means of exchange for anything. There's nothing in the Bitcoin network that says that limits how it can be used in the real world. So from the Bitcoin perspective, yes. From outside of Bitcoin, I have absolutely no idea. Thank you for the question.
Camilla Pratt, City Club member. Could you tell us two advantages of using Bitcoin, like for somebody like us? Two advantages.
Thank you. Two advantages. Thank you for your question. I don't know if I can. It's fun. It's interesting. If you needed to transfer money internationally for some reason, I think it might be less expensive to do that via Bitcoin than via another means. And that's about it. I have one.
Hi, Joe Koswick, City Club member. I don't understand how you get started in this Bitcoin. Do I go to my credit union and say, here's $100, give me $100 worth of Bitcoins?
Good question, thank you. So I can tell you what I did. I went online and found an exchange that I thought was reputable and created an account there. Then they asked for either a credit card, which I wasn't going to give, or bank information, which I ended up giving to that website. And with that, I was able to confirm that, or they were able to confirm that I really did have an account, and then I approved transfer of some money into the Bitcoin account that I had on that exchange. Then I converted it into Bitcoin and had Bitcoin at that point. So those are the mechanics of how I got started. Did that answer your question?
You passed around a thing that looked like a flash drive. Is that where you plug it into your computer, that whatever that thing was, and then download the Bitcoins? Is that the way that works?
Gotcha. So you don't have to do that. So the thing that I passed around, two different things that are here at the table. One were the things that look like thumb drives. They were USB attached, which would put into a computer. Those only Bitcoin miners, the people who want to operate the network, would use. If you want to be a casual user of Bitcoin, so to speak, you definitely don't need that. There was another handout that I had. There were pieces of paper. There were Bitcoin wallets, which have those QR codes on them, those black and white matrices. And so that's what you would need. You'd need to have some type of Bitcoin wallet, either a paper one or more likely software that you find and download and run, and that would hold the Bitcoin on it for you. So if you had the money at a Bitcoin exchange, they would need to deposit it somewhere. There's a place that would need to go, and that would need to go into the Bitcoin wallet of one kind or another.
Yeah, I'm Jack Dresser. I was busy developing drug abuse prevention and intervention programs in Los Angeles in the 1980s when the CIA was flooding the inner city with crack cocaine and overwhelming all the efforts. And all of this, of course, revealed by the Iran-Contra hearings. And one of the things that became obvious was that drugs are a cash, these are cash transactions to avoid paper trails. And I'm wondering if Bitcoins are now being used for these big transactions as opposed to suitcase fulls of $100 bills.
Interesting question. Yes, we know that it's being used. There is an online site called Silk Road a long time back that did exactly that, that shipped drugs, usually illegal narcotics and a variety of other things. It was replaced by something else. When it was shut down, that was shut down and was replaced by something else. So one of the big currencies that was in use on there, I understand, was Bitcoin. So yes.
Emily Semple, City Club member. What do you think about that it can't be changed, especially with stealing other people's Bitcoins? Do you think anybody'd be, how many people want to change it, and what do you think about that?
I think Satoshi had something in mind for that, a small casual transactions. I think humans are really bad at absolutes. So if something is irrevocable, we immediately try to find a way of undoing that in some fashion. And I think largely the financial institutions in place are there to follow through with our intent. And if we didn't intend to do something, they can undo that. In Europe, there was a major bank that accidentally transferred way too much of their money to, I think it was a subsidiary or someone. I don't remember the details, but they caught that. If they had been using Bitcoin solely for that, the money would be gone. It would be just a giant oops. So I think a lot of the times we need the ability to undo things. And I think something like this has a primary use for small casual transactions.
Hi, Ralph Pledger, City Club member for about 3 years. This has definitely been one of the more technical programs that I've attended here. I don't actually have so much of a question as I'm going to ask you to maybe dig a little deeper into a couple of issues that were discussed at the table. I don't think people fully understand what a Bitcoin is. If you were to give a 2 or 3 minute definition, how would you do that? And maybe also a blockchain. Could I ask you to just to dig a little deeper and try to clarify those issues?
Sure, I'll give it my best. So I'll tackle the last one first, blockchain. So blockchain is the algorithm, or the data structure, I should say, that supports the Bitcoin network. It's new, it didn't exist before 2009, and it solved a particular problem that they were having around digital cash. So it figured out that problem in a rather elegant way. So it's just a data structure, but it can be used for a lot of different things. And so I think it has a lot of promise, not only for currencies, but also for computation, for identity things. It's really being put to a lot of use. A lot of people are realizing the potential on it. So a data structure or just an interesting computer thing. Bitcoin, I don't know if I can define Bitcoin. How would you define a dollar? Rhetorical question. But it's a belief that something is going to have value. If I wasn't using a currency, I would be bartering for something else. I'd be exchanging the thing I have for the thing someone else has, or we'd be exchanging services, and that would be on an informal basis. Currency makes that more scalable. And so we physically realize that with dollar bills sometimes, but we don't always. So if I need to transfer money between accounts to pay for my credit card, because I use my credit card at the grocery store, then I will log on to my bank's website and then transfer the money from checking account to pay off the credit card. I didn't hold any physical money when I did that. And so I think Bitcoin is something similar to that. It doesn't have to be that physical thing. It's the belief that something has value and can be used for that for at least a limited period of time. So I hope that expands the definition a little bit, maybe clarifies for some folks.
Thank you for coming today. I'm Paul Thompson, a City Club member off and on since 2003. For the life of me, I don't understand why the Bitcoin value can go up and down as much as we have experienced sometime in the market. Could you give an explanation of why the value of the Bitcoin vacillates so much on a short-term basis?
I wish I could. Is it Mike? There we go. So I wish I could. I don't have the foggiest. I'm completely in the dark on that. Sorry.
Ah.
No idea.
And you don't know what the phenomenon is that... Yeah, that's interesting.
No.
Okay.
I look at the protocol side of things. The financial side of things, it's interesting. There's too much there, and I don't have the tools to digest it.
John Doyle, City Club member. And to me, this thing looks like the proverbial rabbit hole. Why would I take my credit card to buy Bitcoin when I can just use my credit card? The dollar, you have the government behind it, they supposedly have blocks of gold and silver that have a monetary value that people put on it. What does Bitcoin have? Faith? That's it. There's nothing there. It's just, to me, it doesn't make any sense. Can you explain? And what's an question? What exactly is an exchange, and how does that work?
So, on the exchange part, a Bitcoin exchange is just like any other currency exchange. If you wanted to convert your money from U.S. dollars into Canadian dollars or some other type of currency, you would go to an exchange and exchange your dollars for an amount in that other currency. And so a Bitcoin exchange just serves that function for dollars into Bitcoin or into that to that other currency. I'm sorry, what was that? A Bitcoin exchange is an organization sets up a site, and that's their front door that they accept new customers through. So as far as I know, most exchanges have an online presence only and don't have a brick and mortar place where you could actually walk in and conduct business. But that's an exchange, a website that will accept your money and give you Bitcoin back.
Do they make a profit, or are they just there as a functionary?
Bitcoin exchanges do make a profit, and I think I failed to mention that in my talk. But for each exchange, there will be a flat fee or a percentage of the transaction, or sometimes both, in order to move that money either back or forth. And so that's how they make their money. They're a for-profit business, and that's just one of their ways, I might add, of a Bitcoin exchange can make money. Thank you.
Sandra Bishop, City Club member. I have a couple questions from the audience. One of them is, could we go back to the basics here? If a Bitcoin is worth $7,000, if one Bitcoin has value of $7,000, how do these small transactions work? So if you buy a $4 pen at Saturday Market, what's actually happening?
Okay. I failed to mention that earlier too. But just like dollars can be broken into smaller units, we have quarters, dimes, nickels, and pennies. So a particular Bitcoin can be broken into its units, all the way down to a millionth of a Bitcoin too. So think of them as Bitcoin pennies, although they do have a different name. So most of the time, Bitcoin transactions will be to support small casual transactions. They'll just be a fraction of a Bitcoin, and that'll be recorded.
Great. Another question from the audience about security. So if I have money in the bank, I usually go to banks that are covered by insurance. So if I start investing and have my savings or whatever in Bitcoin, are these exchanges insured?
Interesting question. I have no idea if any particular exchange is insured, but think of it conceptually as the same thing of converting all your money into a different currency. So I'm going to pick on yen. So I have dollars, but now I want them all in yen, or some portion of them in yen. It's the same concept, but I think it's especially worse because Bitcoin's value changes up and down a lot more than most of the world's currencies. So that's what I've seen. That's what I've observed. I'm not recommending anything financially, but.
So another kind of angle on that question is, who loses when a cryptocurrency exchange is hacked?
Interesting question. So the exchange definitely loses. It loses reputation of being able to conduct business in a secure fashion. So loss of confidence usually happens first. Also, the depositors who have their accounts, have certain amounts there, they usually lose their currency. Sometimes it's backed or guaranteed by an exchange to some degree, but you'd have to inspect each exchange to see what they offered or exactly how they offered it. So it's complex. I haven't looked into any particular ones.
Then one other question from the audience. You said that it's anonymous, so isn't that the goal of Bitcoin, that you can't the individual transactions aren't necessarily traced? then how do they even know who it is that's buying something? So that's part of it. And then is there any kind of ID checking on these accounts? I mean, there has to be, as a security expert. How do they walk that fine line between it being anonymous transactions, or perhaps it's just that you can't access it from outside, but how do they check the ID on the accounts? Isn't that why it's being used for criminal activities? That was the question.
Interesting. So for that, there's a difference between Bitcoin and Bitcoin exchanges. And Bitcoin exchanges, as an operating entity, have to do things like know their customers. So they have to do ID checking, verify that it's associated with a known bank account, and all of the other responsibilities that financial institutions have to have. They just don't get the benefits. Bitcoin itself isn't an anonymous currency. There are others that are out there that try to do something like that. Monero is one, Zerocoin is another, but Bitcoin isn't quite. It hides a lot of that information from folks, and exactly how it works in terms of identifying is technical, but you can see some of that on the wallets. There's a public part and a private part. That gets back to public and private cryptography and essentially how that works. If I have the private key on here, then I have full access to that particular wallet and any funds that might be associated with that. And that's about as short as I can be on that one, but more would involve a technical explanation. I hope that answered your question.
Forgive me if you already addressed this, but say I've got a bunch of Bitcoin that I've somehow accumulated and I want to cash it out in dollars. How do I go about doing that?
Interesting. So you would take that to a Bitcoin exchange, and they would walk you through the process. So you would essentially sell your Bitcoin back for dollars, and after that process is complete, then you would take those dollars and have them deposited to your account. So usually, that working backwards, you might go to the exchange, set up an account, associate that with your bank account, and then bring in wherever you have your Bitcoin from. That could be in one place, one wallet, like the wallets that are out here. That could be in multiple places, and have those brought into your account, sold for dollars, and then later, after the dollars are available for you, which isn't an instantaneous process, have them transferred to your bank. So I hope that answered the question.
This is Eric Richardson, City Club manager, member. I was just wondering about the statement you made about third world countries using this coin, or the possibility of them looking at using that for their purposes, governmental affairs and whatnot. Could you just talk about the ramifications of a government doing that?
So I'm not an economist and couldn't tell you all of the implications of that, but I think it's interesting. The idea of a particular nation. The examples I had earlier were Venezuela and Zimbabwe, and there are a bunch of others that are ripe for this. And ripe is experiencing hyperinflation. So that just means I get a paycheck, I try to deposit it at the bank, and then take it, use it at the grocery store, and it can't pay my grocery bill. So I don't get the money that I expect by the time I actually try to spend it. So it doesn't retain its store of value. So places in the world that are experiencing that, I think, are the people want something better. I think all of us want our money to have value across time. And if that's not happening, we want an alternative for it. So if Bitcoin or if something else can do that job, then I think people will start using it. What the macroeconomic effects are, what a government thinks of that, I don't know. And if a government tried to stop it from happening, I also don't know what would happen, but that would certainly be interesting.
Right. So, and I was interesting that you used the word ripe, because that means to me you're thinking about the investor. It's ripe for an investment, perhaps, so people to go into those countries. And so, backing that one out, I'm wondering, is there a singular entity that benefits from the entire system financially?
I don't know. Good question.
Okay. We have another question here from the audience.
This is Emily Semple sneaking in another comment. Opposite to my previous question about would people like to undo Bitcoin transactions, I have two friends that got married, and that day they made a Bitcoin transaction just so it would be permanently recorded. So there's another use.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome.
So you also talked about the huge amount of electricity that is taken to do this. Has there been any studies to talk about what that is and financially? What is the give and take as far as that? Is there a cost that has been, that they put that cost into the Bitcoin itself?
Yes, there have been a few articles on this, and most of them talk about that. And a lot of them will say that Bitcoin uses more than the total electricity used in Iceland or in Denmark or in some other country, depending upon when the article comes out. So they like to make those comparisons and projections too. If Bitcoin continues, it will use X amount of the percentage of the world's electricity, whether that's 3% or 3,000% or something equally ridiculous. I don't think it's on a good trajectory right now, but I think the electrical consumption just to keep up the Bitcoin network is not something that's going to be able to be maintained in the future. So we need an alternative, but fortunately right around the corner is proof of stake to hopefully alleviate that. So the Ethereum network is looking at switching to proof of stake instead of proof of work. Proof of work being the one which consumes a bunch of electricity, and proof of stake, essentially the more Bitcoin Ether you have, excuse me, different network, that you have, the more you're interested in guaranteeing that it's going to continue processing legitimate transactions and that there won't be things like double spending happening on that network. So it operates a little bit differently, but one of the consequences is that there isn't this complete race to have the best computation with more and even more equipment. Instead, it's if you have money in it, then you're interested in keeping it up. And if you have a tiny amount in there, somebody else can do the work, is what I take out of proof of stake and electricity.
All right, thank you. This is kind of related to that. You spoke a little bit about the elimination of jobs, or just the a lot of this is happening without jobs being created per se. And there seems to, could you just speak about jobs around this whole system, and how many, is there any way to know how many people are employed or benefit from that just from the interacting with the system and not necessarily using the Bitcoins?
So I haven't seen any articles talking about the personnel difference between them, but the personnel that are involved with Bitcoin would be, and other cryptocurrencies, are the developers who are making that particular cryptocurrency and keeping it up. Also, those who are maintaining it, the Bitcoin miners. So I know there's at least one major operation happening in Oregon that I read about a few years ago, where they essentially take miniature computers, plug in the Bitcoin miners like I passed out or were passed out earlier, and they have racks and racks and racks of these. And so their goal is to purchase the cheapest electricity to keep as many of these on as possible. So there are those personnel. And there are also Bitcoin exchanges, the folks involved with keeping that online. So that's those personnel on one side for cryptocurrencies. On the other side, for financial staff, it's all the ones that we already know. But again, I think the jobs that financial industry does are completely different than what cryptocurrencies do. Small casual transactions that can happen anywhere without a whole bunch of intermediaries taking a cut, driving up the cost of transferring small amounts of money internationally, I think Bitcoin is ideally suited at. For transactions like mortgages, where if there's a mistake, that's a life-changing event, that's something where I think that needs a lot more oversight. There need to be personnel who can step in and say, you missed that by a zero, one way or the other is important. And so I think they do different jobs, and I think it's not going to be one versus the other. I just think there's a new option that we didn't have before. So it's not a replacement, it's an addition net in terms of jobs, is my thought.
Yeah. And just really quick, maybe you know, how many people do you think that center that you spoke about employs?
No idea.
Okay. There's, thank you. One more question for today. This one is around just the idea of criminality and being able to access these cryptocurrencies for ill. In 2004, the United States shut down eGold and arrested its director. Do you see any similar actions coming on the horizon for cryptocurrencies?
Not on the horizon, they're already here. So I think Russia shut down a variety of cryptocurrency exchanges that purported to be exchanges and really just stealing money. So that's happening, and I'm sure that just pure fraud is going to continue to happen.
Yes. Well, okay. Well, thank you very much for today's program and all the information you gave us around Bitcoin. I've learned a lot, and I hope our audience did too. Let's give it up for our guest speaker today. And I'd also like to thank public radio station KLCC for airing the City Club programs on Monday at 6:30 p.m. And thank to you, the community television of Lane County, who also airs our programs on cable channel 29. So next week, we will be having a program on Friday, June 29th, and our presentation will be Transportation Today and Tomorrow. What changes are in store? So please, one more time, let's give it up for our guest speaker today, Moran Peasley. For more details and information about future programs, please visit us online at cityclubofeugene.org. Thank you, speakers, and thank you, Moran Peasley, and this concludes today's program.